Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Am I still seeing you on Saturday as well?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Are you flying on Saturday night?
I'm flying tomorrow.
Oh, you're doing 2 days.
No, I'm doing Saturday.
I'm just doing...
That's not right.
No, because we're doing it together.
You sure you're not doing Saturday? Because I'm definitely not doing Sunday.
Wait, dude, are you sure?
Definitely.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
Is the 12th Saturday or Friday?
This is the 10th, so the 12th is Saturday. Do you have a different day then?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Dave, do you have any idea? I would have been literally there the wrong day. Please see attached advance sheet for Saturday. Oh, my God. I got to move some stuff. I'm going to just dictate one quick thing.
Yeah, do it. Do it. We got lots of time.
Hi there. I'm so sorry to do this. I made a huge mistake and I am leaving town tomorrow, period. I thought I was leaving Saturday. That's why I scheduled Pilates! Exclamation point. I would love to cancel these sessions and I'll hit you up to reschedule for next week. Exclamation point. Thank you so much. All right. What? I'm really glad I did that because I'm in the 24-hour window. I can cancel this and get charged.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, we're just you're just in.
David Tennant does a podcast with
Kristen Ritter.
Before you were approached about Jessica Jones,
yeah,
had you ever opened a comic book?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Not of any kind?
Let me think if it was there. No, there was never even one.
So what did you think about superheroes? What was your...
I guess I just thought... You know, that image in my head of, like, I guess the other, like, Marvel movies that are, like, on billboards in L.A. wasn't really a part of my vocabulary. And I think, so that was, what, 2014? Superheroes are now everywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe they were then, too, and I didn't notice as much because I'm in it now. I just kind of thought, oh, they want to see me for this superhero thing. I mean, that's obviously not what I look like. I'm not, that's not me, but I'll go because I want to be like in the mix.
Mm.
I was actually like just available because something else I was doing didn't happen. And I was like, yes, I'm back. All right, what can I do? Let's go do some stuff. You know, when you're like attached to something and kind of benched.
So Marvel didn't mean anything to you? It wasn't,
no.
It wasn't part of your childhood? You didn't even watch like Spider-Man cartoons or...
Never.
Nothing.
I watched Days of Our Lives.
Okay.
And As the World Turns.
Right.
Like with my mom from the time I was super little.
Right.
And then after that, I was into like angsty stuff, like my so-called life. I was never exposed to comic books.
Mm.
I'm from the sticks. I wasn't like, you know, I was the only child.
Mm.
So there was like no one around to like show me those things.
So what was your childhood like then?
I grew up in a little town until I was 12 called Benton. That was like three streets, like Park Street, First Street, Second Street, Third Street.
Yeah.
Across the street was the school.
Right.
So I could walk to school. Behind the school was a creek. So I would go like crayfishing and like fishing and like wade in the water and swim. There was a dam we would swim in, ride my bike around. It was pretty, like, normal.
Outdoorsy, though.
Very outdoorsy. Very Norman Rockwell. Very, like, normal Americana. Your grandmother lives a couple blocks away. You could run to her house through other people's yards.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin lived next door. And then when my parents got divorced when I was in sixth grade, I then moved with my mom and her new husband to the sticks.
Right.
Like, no kids around, nowhere to ride your bike, like, a farm in the middle of...
And this is Schick-Shinning.
This is Schick-Shinning.
I mean, that's an amazing name.
I know, right? Yeah. All the jokes and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's the middle of nowhere. Like, the population, I believe, is, like, 1,100 people.
Right.
And I only know because I've, like, looked it up in the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And I'm listed as being from there.
Sure.
Kind of a big deal.
I can't imagine there's a lot of alumni.
Nope, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
So then I moved there and then there was no kids for me to play with, nowhere to ride my bike. And I had to like, entertain myself, but there were animals, cows, chickens, things like that.
So it was a working farm?
Yeah, working farm, a cattle farm.
And your mom and her husband, they were farmers?
Yeah. So my stepfather grew up there, was born there in this house. I think like his family had it.
I see.
From
so
the
1800s. Moved to him.
We moved to him. Yeah, into his farm.
Right.
And he's a farmer.
Okay.
It's not like a huge farm. It's nothing like what you see on television. It's not like Food Inc., but which when I saw things like that, I was like, what? That's not what this is like. It's literally like 15 to 20 cows in your backyard that all have names and that you feed them a couple times a day.
And did you get involved as a kid?
Yeah, I had chores. And sometimes if they ever went away for the weekend or something, like I had to feed the cows.
Oh, right.
They eat at 5 in the morning and at 5 p.m. and doesn't matter what you're doing, that has to happen. I had a calf of my own. His name was Jake. And we would get our calves at livestock auctions. Where you'd bid on them, like, per pound. Like, the auctioneers or with their fast boys, like, 45 pounds, 40, whatever.
Yeah.
So I had a calf that we got at auction, and he was brown with a white face. He was a Hereford, and he lived in, like, a little hut, like a dog coop, like a little calf coop across the street. And, like, he was bottle fed. Yeah.
So by you?
Yeah, bottle fed by me. And that was always a thing. Like, the calves love to, like, drink out of the bottle, and they suck your fingers too. You could like pat them, and then they'll like get your hand and like a baby with a binky.
Yeah,
yeah. So it was unlike anything I see now in Los Angeles.
Sure,
I had to entertain myself, a lot of animals, and it was it was pretty cool.
When you were in school and you're that age, is acting a thing for you at all?
No,
not even a consideration.
Not even a consideration.
Right.
There was no nothing in entertainment. Nothing.
Right. Because there's no precedence for it around you. Presumably.
No precedence for it. Yeah. You don't even know it's a real thing. It's nothing you're exposed to at all. There's no programs in the schools. This is a tiny school.
Sure. What did you think you were going to do with your life then if acting wasn't something that you would even consider?
Yeah. So I didn't really, I wasn't passionate about this, but I did have an answer for the question when I was that age.
Yeah.
My baby sister, who was born with a heart murmur, was always going to the pediatric cardiologist.
Uh-huh.
So I guess I decided I was going to be a pediatric cardiologist.
Oh, it sounds great, doesn't it?
It sounds great.
Yeah.
I don't even think I knew what it meant.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know. And I think that that is a scary place for kids to be. When you don't know and there is this pressure. I've seen it now with my sister, who's 22 now. And kind of still figuring it out.
Sure.
When you like are at this age when you have to decide if you're going to college or what are you going to do and what do you want to be and choosing a lane, if you don't know and other kids around you do know, it's hard.
Mm.
I think because I didn't know what I wanted to be, I was kind of always like, I got to do like, what else?
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily when I was scouted at the mall when I was only 15.
Yeah, tell me about that. So you're at a shopping mall. How far away is the shopping mall for
like
a
45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
In this town called Wilkes-Barre.
Okay.
So I'm at,
that's
but
the
that's
big
the
city
mall.
For you.
That's
right.
Like where you go to the mall.
Okay.
Like that's if you want to go to the grocery store, like it's far.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm at the mall, and Elite Model Management is in town searching for girls.
Oh, so it's like a stall in the mall.
It happened to be.
It's not just somebody doesn't just come up and tap you on the shoulder.
No, that's exactly what happened. Somebody came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder. Her name was Erin Lundgren,
okay. And
she was from Elite Model Management. And I think I was out front of, like, I don't know, either Payless or, like, Deb Shop or something.
What did she say to you?
She was, well, it was such a weird thing because at this time, like, I was really skinny and really tall. And, like, there were girls that, like, the cheerleader type girls that were in home ec would go around and be like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a model. Like, those kind of girls. And
so
I just
hadn't
never.
Crossed your mind.
Oh, God, no.
Right.
I was, like, Daria, or you know what I mean? Like, I was not that.
Right.
I was, like, kind of goth, and it just wasn't like that. And I had no confidence at all. So when she said that, I think it was shocking. But I was really tall, too. So we would kind of, like, my mom would hear it sometimes. Like, oh, she's so tall and, you know, unique looking. She should be a model. I was like, yeah, whatever. Neither of us thought that. So it was shocking to have, like, an actual agency that I had, like, heard of in the back of 17 magazine and stuff. She was like, oh, have you ever thought about modeling or coming to New York? We could do a test shoot. If you want to like come be in this contest. I was like, okay, sure. So I did.
And you're sure it's a real thing or does it feel like a bit creepy or?
She was a really nice, like, gentlewoman who didn't feel creepy at all. And it was also a company.
Let me take your picture.
Totally. Yeah. It wasn't that. And that's something that I think people need to watch out for.
Sure, yeah.
And Elite is again, like, a big company.
Yeah.
Like,
so you could check up.
The top. And, yeah. So then they brought me to New York and I started doing test shoots. And that was when I was 15. And I started going to New York on my own when I was 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
How big a journey is that?
That's a 3.5 hour bus ride door to door.
You know. You remember.
On the Martz Trailways. And you would go and, like, if I had to be in the city for a job, I would just take, like, the 5 a.m. bus. I'd be at Port Authority by 7.
Did you just take time off school whenever you needed it?
Yeah. I missed a lot of school.
Right. And did, like, did the school mind that? Or?
Yes, very much.
Okay,
it was
a real hard time.
It was very difficult.
Okay,
the teachers had a lot of opinions. They thought it was so stupid. They didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
I had one teacher who, like, wouldn't even make eye contact with me because she thought what I was doing was so so stupid.
Stupid because people
because
from Shikshin didn't do that.
Because it's not real. It's not going anywhere. That's not a real job. Like, she just didn't. She just thought it was so, like, silly.
And what did you think? Did you think, oh, I'll do it? Because it's there, or?
I really enjoyed it. I loved getting out of my small town, and then I'd get to the city, and you'd be at these photo shoots with this, like, spread of food and these, like, people, and, like, you'd meet these, like, really eccentric, flamboyant characters, and I was just like, whoa.
Was your mom worried for you?
No, I think they were happy to be rid of me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, my mom remarried. They had a new baby. I think it's like,
right.
Peace out.
Yeah. How often would you be going up and down to New York?
Well, you're allowed to miss like 30 days of school or something. So I missed probably that or more.
Right. So after a while, you'd just start saying you had a cold or something?
Or we would turn it into an educational trip.
Okay.
So I would do like a report or do like a presentation on like the subway system or like, you know.
So you weren't scared? The whole getting on a bus and tooting
up to New
York?
No, I wasn't scared. But when you're young, you don't have that brain development
fearless.
To be scared.
Right, right.
And
right.
I would also dress ridiculous.
Right.
Like the summer times, I'd wear like a bandana as a shirt.
Right.
I look back and I'm like, oh my God. I like basically wear no clothes.
Right.
Like walking around New York City, going to my go-sees.
Right.
It was fun.
So you had no bad experiences. It was all positive.
No chaperone. No,
wow.
Actually, I am fortunate. Like, you always hear, well, the modeling world is so tiny that news of it doesn't really get out unless it's bad.
Right.
So you always hear about, like, the drugs and the eating disorders.
Yeah.
I was actually just around a bunch of, like, misfits. We were just, like, eating White Castle hamburgers and Haagen-Dazs and orange juice, whatever we could afford, and, like, getting furniture off the streets. We were, like, scrappy, like, kids.
Right. Where were you living?
I was either living in a model's apartment in New York, and they were kind of all over. There was one on, like, 49th and 1st. There was one on 29th and Park. Like, you know, you just take the subway.
And were you partying? Would you?
Yeah, so there were these party promoters that would call the apartments. Like, you wouldn't even know who these people were.
Wow.
And the phone would ring, like, hello, how are you? We're going to pick you up tonight
this
in a limo.
This is terrifying.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then, so, yeah, I was like 16, 17, going to clubs in the front of the line, go right in, no IDs checked, table service, dancing. Yeah.
Getting drunk.
Totally. But not too drunk, because the thing is like, that's the thing about not having a chaperone.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a good brain and realize, oh, I have to make it to my job tomorrow and, like, do a good job if I want to, like, keep this going.
Right.
I got really savvy really quick. I didn't fuck around. I didn't, like,
right.
I didn't hurt myself in any way.
So you grew up.
Yeah.
That
fast.
Experience.
It makes you grow up really fast.
Yeah. So where does acting show up in all this?
So, yeah. So I was always, like, kind of loud and obnoxious. And in the modeling world, there would be, like, some crossover people in the agencies where they would send you on commercials. So that's kind of how I got.
Okay.
I weaseled my way into the acting community by doing commercials.
Right.
And going in there and, like, you know, it was a nice break, too, because when you're a model, they're just looking at your portfolio and your face. They don't really care if you're funny.
Does it encourage you to be narcissistic?
How so?
Well, because if life as a model is all, it's simply about what you look like, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. That's why I ultimately, like, was rebellious against it. Like, I'd go to these go-sees and they'd be like, so where are you from? Like, who cares? What does it matter? Where are you from? Like, I was a little badass. Obnoxious. But then when I started going to the commercial auditions and they would ask you questions and you could, like, be funny or have a joke or, like, that seemed off the cuff, but you really like prepared it beforehand.
Yeah, right.
Or like they'll want you to like do dance moves, and all the girls would like do their like cool, suave dance moves, and I would do something ridiculous.
So being funny always felt like the way in for you.
Yeah, that
always
totally.
Felt like your USP was that
100%.
You could be. Yeah. Okay.
So the goofier and more ridiculous I was, it seemed to work, like
right.
getting these commercials.
Right.
And I really loved that. I felt that was like really kind of the first thing. I was like, this is it. Like, I can always work harder. I can be better. I can be funnier. I could show up earlier. Like, this is something I actually have control over.
Right.
With acting.
Yeah.
Versus, like, whatever.
So you found you were good at auditioning.
Yeah, I was really good at auditioning. I really liked it. Now I can't even. Now I hate it so much.
Well, because you don't have to anymore.
Maybe that has something to do with it, because you do it so infrequently that when you do have to do it, you're like, oh, stop looking at me.
So it was an obvious thought, you know, well, because in a commercial, you're doing a bit of acting anyway.
Yeah.
So then did you go and get an acting agent?
So I started working with the manager in my modeling agency. At this point, I'm with an agency called Company, which was cool, like editorial models, like James King was there, like kind of a cool agency, but they had an acting division.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For those girls who were like becoming actresses.
Right.
So I started working with a manager, and we started getting a lot of commercials, and she was basically like, you'll start working with this acting coach, Alice Spivak, who's like one of the toughest in New York. Like, I look back and I was like, she's one of the most abusive people in my life. it was a short period of time. Now I have an amazing acting coach, but she was really rough on me. I think it helped me in a lot of ways, but...
What kind of rough? What do you mean?
She's just kind of like, you know those acting coaches that kind of rip you apart?
You mean psychologically? She
tries
to strip you down because that's what's perceived, that's what you need right now.
Yeah, it's not though.
Not necessarily
I don't like that
a good
stuff.
Thing. No,
no.
Okay.
Well, that's a whole other.
Yeah, sure. That's a different podcast.
So I started working with her kind of until she told my manager if I was ready or not to go out on like acting auditions.
Right.
So that was humbling and good for me, because when I did start going out on auditions, I started getting the callbacks.
Okay.
So it was kind of like that. And also that same manager was like, look, we were going to go out there. You're going to be fresh. You're going to be good. I don't want to ever hear that you're green. And I don't want people to think that you're a model turned actress.
Right.
So this is it. I was like, okay.
So what you mean, she's just literally teaching you how to be an actor?
Yeah, I had to go to her class. We did like scene study, and I would go to her house and do privates, and she would like make me do like monologues from like suburbia, and this is our youth, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then I just wasn't modeling anymore. She just had me kind of not go on the ghosties for the catalogs.
So you didn't do modeling and acting at the same time? You
mm-mm.
just stopped?
Yeah.
You had enough money to kind of...
Yeah. Well, and also the commercials were paying more than the modeling.
I see. Okay.
Commercials were kind of what you wanted to book. Commercials,
right.
like in the beginning, would even pay more than a small movie role.
Because you get repeat fees every time it was on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as someone who likes control.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you find this new world you were in frustrating, that you were waiting on someone else to hire you?
I didn't see it that way.
Okay.
Because I was coming from modeling where I actually felt like I had no control. I can't control that my nose is pointy,
right.
or that like I'm skinny but still have a butt. Like, I can't control those things.
Right. So it felt empowering to move into acting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt like an audition, for example, was like my opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
To like do my
thing.
To
take the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Because I remember like always hearing like girls that were coming up at the same time, like, oh, did you audition for this? Did you hear who got this? Like, so, oh, I think what they're looking for is this. Like, so kind of obsessed with like getting the job or who got the job. And I really, thank God, I don't know why, I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it like me getting to do my thing.
Okay. And it started
working. Either that was right or it wasn't right.
Right. Right.
But I knew, like, I felt like if I could sleep, I would be able to sleep really well at night knowing, like, I worked really hard, I was really prepared, and I nailed it.
Right.
That was all.
That was enough for you.
That was enough for me.
And you did get some work.
And I did get some work.
Okay.
Because I was goofy and silly and whatever. I would always get that stuff.
Right.
Like, those were, like, in the bag.
So what were the first proper acting jobs you did?
Well, I had one line in Mona Lisa's Smile. So that doesn't really count. But I did run a picture on that.
Sure.
4 months.
Oh,
job.
Really?
Yeah.
For one line?
Yeah.
Did you have more lines originally that it got cut down to one?
I honestly don't even remember if I had other lines.
Were you already a bit frustrated you didn't have enough to do?
I think I was intimidated in the beginning because this is my first time like on a movie set with like Julia Roberts is sitting where you are.
Sure, yeah.
So it's just like, oh my God.
The biggest movie star in the world.
The biggest movie star in the world. Yeah. The coolest. And she's like, said fuck once in a while and was knitting all the time. Like she was awesome and she smelled so good. You could smell her walk in the room.
Right.
So it was amazing. And then by the end, I was like, okay, I want to like do some stuff.
So Breaking Bad came up. Was it already a big show when you got
No, it wasn't a big show. Okay. I just got so lucky. It's like the gift that keeps on giving. That had 7 episodes, I believe. Maybe 8, I think 7. It was before the second season.
Oh, a little mini season because of the writer's strike. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah.
So, and you were in season 2.
I was in season 2.
Okay.
The best season.
Sure.
No, this whole show is so good. But it was the best season in terms of like the hype.
Yeah.
Because like all of a sudden the show
suddenly
was huge
hit.
And Bryan Cranston was nominated for an Emmy all of a sudden.
Right,
it was like, hey, congratulations on your Emmy nomination.
Right. While you're there, that's all happening. Right. So you go to New Mexico thinking, I've just got a little part in this show.
Totally.
And while you're there, you realize this is
the best show
critical
ever.
Darling of
And my part would end up being a lot bigger than I thought. I thought maybe I was doing like 3 episodes.
Right.
It ended up being like a whole arc for the second season and I came back the next season. It was like it was so good.
Was it a happy set? Did it feel like something exciting was being made?
Yes. And Brian and Aaron were having a great time and the crew was really great. It made me want to do television.
And
I had been on a bunch of shows before and had never really felt like that.
I see.
They were just like, they're doing their dream.
Right.
They were doing the kind of scenes that you dream of doing and you don't often get.
So you're reading the scripts going, oh, no, this is quality. This is a different thing.
And you could feel it everywhere.
Yeah.
The makeup, there was just like a good vibe.
Yeah. And so being attached to that show, does that change things?
Big time. Big time. Thank God.
Right.
So before Breaking Bad, all my roles were like the funny, ditzy, bubbly.
Right.
And then that stopped.
Okay.
And then it's crazy how this works. I'm sure you know. You were so good at Mary Queen of Scots. I watched that movie twice. And so
you watched it twice?
I did. I had the screener. And I just loved it so much. I loved the performances.
Oh, great.
I loved that girl, Saoirse.
She's great, isn't she?
My God.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie's amazing, too.
Yeah.
But Saoirse was just like... Mm. And so when you popped up on screen, my sister and I, I'm like, oh my God, it's DT. And then like, is it really?
Yeah,
you look so different.
It's mostly a beard.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's a beard and a hat.
So after Breaking Bad, then the roles are all like druggies and like cool girl, you know?
And you're much happier there, are you?
I think so, yeah. I felt like that was more
to play,
more
up
nuance. My alley.
Right.
Because I always fancied myself pretty cool, even though I know. I
think you're perceived as pretty cool.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then Don't Trust the Bee comes up.
After.
Straight after that.
Yeah, and that's when things really started to change in my career. That's when, like, I didn't have to go to that audition.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Oh, you just got offered that part?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And that same season, there were a couple.
Right.
There were like a couple.
Right.
Like different ones. It was crazy.
So suddenly you're thinking, okay, this is it. I've arrived.
I was like, wait a minute. You mean I don't have to go to the pre-read and the producer session and the test and the test callback?
Yeah.
So that was awesome. And I really loved the script for Don't Trust the Bee and I loved the creator and I was, you know... So I was like, it's so good. There's no way this is going to get picked up. And then it did. We did 2 years.
And a delicious part.
A delicious part.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But do you, at that point, do you start to lose your anonymity? Do people start to recognize you in the street? And
Yeah.
Or did Breaking
bit.
Bad do
Breaking
that?
Breaking Bad did that.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does that feel? How do you cope with that?
I feel like then I think it was fun. I'm so grateful for the job I have, for the life I have. And like, I love my job. I love that I get to do it. The internet is here now.
Yeah.
That is different. That makes it a little bit harder.
It's a weird thing, though, when you lose that anonymity for the first time. You always imagine it'll be quite empowering. When nobody knew who the hell I was, you'd see a famous person walk into a room and the room would sort of ripple. You kind of think, well, it feels like that's a powerful thing. When you're the person walking into the room and people are whispering about you behind their hands, it's actually rather intimidating. And Did you find that? Did it feel a bit scary?
Yeah, I think that... Before I started being recognized, I would be like on the loud.
Right.
I was like a butterfly, like social butterfly, kind of loud. I'd be on the subway and like being silly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's made me smaller.
Okay.
It's made me like want to hide more.
Right.
It's made me like, oh, don't look at me.
Yeah.
It's given me bad posture.
Right, right.
Because it's a lot of pressure and it's sometimes like it's weird.
Mm.
It's definitely not something that there's no textbook that gets you ready for something like that.
No, quite.
It depends on like what the day is doing.
Mm.
I guess if like I'm like feeling like a rock star that day and I go to like get a cupcake and somebody recognizes me, I'm like, yeah, woohoo. If maybe something isn't great that's going on for me that day, the last thing you want to be is seen by anybody.
Yeah.
Let alone like strangers.
Did you develop your own rules of engagement for that? How to be, how to.
I think I do less things publicly. I think I go out less.
Does that feel like a compromise worth making though? Or
yeah, well, I guess like as I think like even though like I'm, you know, an actor and whatever, a performer in the business, I still recharge like an introvert.
Okay.
So I have to like have a lot of alone time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes like I think I would go out into the world by myself and like do my own thing, headphones, whatever. And if people then know you and see you, I can't recharge in the same way.
Okay.
So right. I stay home more to kind of like take care of myself. Yeah, it just depends. It's definitely weird. I think it's got to be weird for everybody when people come up to you and they're like, hey, Kristen Ritter. You're like, hey. it's cool too.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So when did you first hear about Jessica Jones?
I first heard about Jessica Jones when they wanted me to come in and read for it. This would have been in October of 2014.
Okay.
A long time ago.
So a script just arrives and they say come
Not
in.
Not even a script.
Oh.
It was a scene. Maybe three scenes maximum.
Okay.
A couple of pages.
Okay.
The character's name on the page was Julia. I didn't know anything until I was in the mix. I didn't even know I was in the mix because, like, they didn't tell me for so long. I thought I was going to be doing this other job, and you get this call. When good things happen in our business, you know, you get a call from, like, 10 people on the phone.
Sure.
I was like, ooh, what's this?
And when bad things happen, nobody calls.
Right. Or, like, one person calls because they've been anointed, like, oh, you're the one. Like, break the news. So I got a call with, like, a bunch of people, and I'm like, ooh, that other job is so obviously happening. And they're like, so the other job's not happening, but you're in the mix for Jessica Jones, that thing you auditioned for forever ago.
That you didn't even know.
Didn't even remember or think of. So that happened. I ended up going through the testing process for that.
Okay. And then you get to read a script?
And then I got to read a script before I decided I would test. I got to read the first two scripts, and they were so fantastic.
Sure.
The pilot for Jessica Jones was the best pilot I ever read.
Hmm.
And then I was like, okay, this is the good stuff. This is the stuff you want to go fight for. So I'm going to go fight to get this part.
At that point, do you go and seek out a comic book or not?
I got all the comic books.
At that point?
I got the first one at that point.
Okay.
For the test.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to, like, know more. Like, building her. I wasn't going to, like, you know, read everything at that point because it was just a test.
Yeah.
But then once I got the part, it was like, give me everything that she's ever appeared in.
So what was that audition? It was a full-on screen test with other actors?
With Mike Coulter, actually.
With Mike Coulter?
Yeah.
Luke Cage, right?
Yeah. It was me, and then they had me read with him
as
well.
But he was still... So he was testing for Luke Cage at the same time?
Correct. Because he was going to be in Jessica Jones.
Of course.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, of course, because he got cast in Jessica Jones knowing that Luke Cage was down the line.
Yep, and that Defenders was down the line for all of us. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So did that feel like a big deal, that screen test?
Yeah,
Do you get nervous in a moment like that? Or?
Totally. I get crippled by nerves.
Do you?
Crippled by nerves for everything. But no one knows because I shove it down deep.
Okay.
And like put the,
so to the
put
outer
the funny
world,
on top.
You're cool as a cucumber.
Yes. Which is good and bad because sometimes I'll be like, oh, I feel really nervous for this. And people are like, no, you're fine. You always nail it. And like invalidate my feelings and kind of make me feel worse. And then I'm like, oh, I can't even tell you that many times I've been like on a talk show thinking in my head, I'm going to have to tell whoever it is, David Letterman, Conan, right now that I'm going to faint and I need to leave.
Right.
In my head, as we're doing our banter, like, I'm going to be sick right now. I need to tell him.
Uh-huh.
And I get through it somehow, and then nobody ever believes me. Yeah. But talk shows, press, big auditions like that, dying inside.
Okay. Anyway, you got Jessica Jones. Did you think this is the role? This is...
I did. I really did. And then I started to audition, and I thought that the part was mine because of my connection with Melissa Rosenberg and kind of how she talked to me. But then when I would talk to Jeff Loeb, who you know, I was like, oh, this guy doesn't like me. This is not coming. He's not going to give me this part in a million years. So then it made me scared.
Do you know what it... Did it come down to sort of three actresses, or do you know what the process was? Who knows?
Melissa says...
It was only ever you.
You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
I do know that they had made an offer a couple months before I came in, before they started the audition process.
Oh, you do? Do you know who they made it to?
Yeah, I don't know if I should say.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Tell me after.
I'll tell you after. Yeah. And it would have been a very different show.
Right.
Very different show. Probably not funny.
Okay.
Because we have some good comedy, I think, in the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, that audition process was long and scary. And when I read the scripts, I felt like... this part is mine.
Okay.
I was like, this is something I'm going to be able to do with hard work. Uh-huh. I didn't think I could do it in my sleep.
Right.
I was like, this is something that I can do, and I would love for people to see me do it well.
Yeah. Well, it did feel like it fitted you from the moment you walked on set. But did you feel like there was quite a process to get to that point?
Oh, yes. I remember, and then after I got the part and just being terrified, like, oh, this isn't right. I had to do like so much physical training and like, Melissa really wanted me to like get bigger.
Right.
And then so that was I felt a lot of pressure in that too. Like, oh, they're going to think I'm too like wispy or too thin.
So you started doing like a lot of martial arts training, stuff like that?
Yeah, boxing, a lot of heavyweights. Like I did no cardio because they wanted me to gain weight.
Right.
And a lot of lifting.
But you didn't really gain weight, did you?
I did. I gained 10 pounds
first
season. Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that.
Yeah. She was like, that's Melissa's thing. You know how she has like really specific things that she like really gets fixated on. And that was one. She just has issues with like, she sees these like pretty like, you know, girls with their skinny arms and the fight scenes. And she doesn't think that they could really do anything. And she hates that.
Right.
So I was like, oh my God, that was always in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
So how hard were you training in the run up to
every day? Right. Every day, and then like eating a lot of eggs, like hard boiled eggs, and like all those things. It was brutal.
Pretty gruesome.
It was pretty brutal.
Yeah,
but it was fun too. I was really happy I did it. It helped me have the confidence to be her.
Okay, right. And then you're reading all the comic books, and you're sort of steeping yourself in the whole kind of lore of it.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time by myself, and like trying to find where her voice would live. And try to figure out how she stands, how she walks. Like I was just trying to, and I would like be in my apartment by myself and like lean on a wall. Like how would Jessica lean on this wall? And I just would spend so much time, like full immersion into figuring out how I was going to do this.
Yeah. And of course, season one manages to be a superhero show, of course, but it's also a show about sexual assault and consent and these themes that were at that time just beginning to become incredibly relevant and timely. Were you entirely aware at the early stages that that's the story you were telling? Because I don't know. I don't think I was.
I wasn't either. I had no idea what we were doing was like that important.
Yeah.
I knew that I loved a lot of Melissa's choices.
Mm.
I hate like sexually objectified female leads. I hate when like women are like if they would have put me in like skin tight jeans and high heels. All of those things, like she made really clear choices. Like she hates the word bitch, so we don't use it. I think we used the word bitch one time. She didn't show the act of rape.
Mm-hmm.
She hates that. She doesn't want to like glorify that or make it gratuitous or make it sexy in any way. She just doesn't show it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciated those choices that she made. I felt like the show felt really cool to me in that way. It felt like kind of up my alley in terms of the aesthetic, and it felt different. I felt different. I didn't feel like how you're supposed to look as the lead of a show.
Right.
And I was allowed to do that. Like the costume, which, you know, like we had this woman who started the show, her name was Jenny Rogan, and she did a great job like pulling those pieces for me. But that was like a costume that I fought for.
Right.
I wanted to wear a boxy jacket, and I didn't want to wear, like, I wore, like, jeans that were, like, boyfriend fitting. I didn't want to show my figure. I wanted to, like, hide. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to, like, have a look that she could walk down the street, and a guy's never going to say, like, oh, you look hot. And a girl isn't going to either. No mm-hmm. girl's going to be like, oh, cute outfit. Like, I just wanted to, like, be, like, disappear. But, like, have, like, this armor, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that they let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like the show was interesting and new and cool. And we were seeing a lead in a way that we hadn't really seen before, especially in that genre. There was no focus on being beautiful and glamorous. I just loved a lot of the things that she was doing. But I had no idea that it was going to have the social impact.
Mm.
Half the time you don't even think people are going to see it. Half the time, you don't think it's going to come out,
yeah.
Let alone like...
And also, you know, on one level, it's a Marvel show about superheroes. But of course, I think the reason why the show worked is because that's actually secondary to the psychology of the character.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes like I wouldn't even play... I would never in the 4 years I've been playing this character, I've never once thought like, oh, I'm a superhero.
No, but then Jessica doesn't, I guess. Which
again
is another reason why I think it's so unique within that kind of genre, isn't
yeah.
it, I guess?
Yeah.
I remember the very first, I think it was the first day we were on set together on a freezing cold New York
street. Oh, the fire
street.
Escape.
Yeah, yeah. But it was just before we went up to that, I think, and you had like a book of scripts and you'd obviously, because you were like in week one or something.
Yeah.
And you had all these, your script was covered in notations.
Yeah.
And you were sort of saying, I don't know how to do, because the script amendments are coming in new pages and the yellow pages, and I don't know how to move all my... And you were sort of saying to me, you've done a series, how do I keep on talking? And I remember rather cynically thinking, oh man, a month into it, you're not going to care about your notations. You'll just be living moment to moment. I think it's fair to say that becomes the case, doesn't it? In that sort of schedule. Did that take you by surprise, like in a relentlessness that suddenly it's your show, you're in...
Everything.
80% of the scenes, 90% of the scenes.
Yeah.
Long hours, long days, freezing your ass off.
Yeah.
Did that feel... Did you suddenly go, I've got this show, be careful what you wish for, because, man, this is hard.
It was really hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard, and, you know, it's still hard. Nothing will ever be as hard as the first season.
Uh-huh.
Because when you go into the second, you have, like, that... All that groundwork is done, and you can, like, grow from there. It's definitely a hard thing. And what I thought was going to work in the beginning, like my script notes, that's like a process I've always done that had to adapt and change. And then I think with time, you also find a confidence and an understanding of the character.
Yeah.
By 4 years in, I mean, now some of the stuff you're talking about, whereas in the beginning, you have to go create those memories and as if things for yourself. By 4 years, you've actually lived those things.
Mm. Oh, and there's no part of me going, oh, silly Kristen doing all these notes on a script. I think that's a process, particularly the start.
Sure.
It's really valuable and really gets you to somewhere. But then it's by episode four, you're just going, what's tomorrow?
100%. Yeah. And I would then, so how my process adapted, what I would do is I've coached on all my scripts. Or at least on like the maybe like 10 out of 13 or all of them or 10 out of 13, pretty close to all of them. I'll coach on them, do my first pass of notes on the first draft and then kind of leave it. And then as the new pages come in, the work is kind of already in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You trust the magic that you've done the work and it's there. But yeah, in the beginning, I'd have all my notes on all my pages, and then like a new revision would come, and I'd have to hand write then onto the new pages, and it's like sweeping the ocean with a broom because you get a new page every day, and it's not something you can keep up with, and I was absolutely drowning. So now what I do also, and I directed an episode this season, which the same thing happens because a lot of people are using this new script, are using Scriptation on the iPad.
Yeah,
and I'm just like old school. I love to be able to like write things out by hand. Oftentimes that's how I remember my lines.
Uh-huh.
I write them out once they're there.
Right.
Forever.
Yeah. You're quick, aren't you?
I'm good at that. I have a good memory. You're quick too. You can just pick it up.
I feel like I have to work harder at it though. I feel like you'd come in some days and just look at it and know it.
Yeah. A lot of times,
you're
also,
younger than me. That's what it is.
Well, a lot of times too is because I do that first pass, like on the whole script, Like uh-huh. my first pass of notes, go through it, and then put it aside. And then, you know, if I put it in the brain already, I can pick it up.
Yeah,
later.
Filters in, yeah.
So that's kind of how I roll. And I think that it's like a muscle, too. Playing a role like Jessica Jones, when you're in everything, you get stronger. Just like a bicep, you know what I mean? The more you lift, the stronger it gets.
And then the show is done, and you're promoting it around the world relentlessly. Were you ready for the debates about sexual politics that, you know, we would do interviews and we were being asked about all that stuff. And were you ready for that? Were you nervous about the sensitivity of talking about?
Yeah, I think especially I'm always nervous to say anything because if something is taken out of context, so you don't say exactly the right thing. And the next thing you know, that's like a headline and you're like, what? I didn't.
Mm.
So it's hard to be sensitive about sensitive stuff.
Yeah, of course.
But I was also so happy to be a part of a show that is even inspiring conversations like that.
Sure.
It's so often that you something doesn't – you want your work to be seen and you want to, like, reach people. And I felt like Jessica Jones, like, actually reached people in a meaningful way in their lives. So that was like, whoa, this is more than just, like, me getting this cool role.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but is that a pressure you always felt able, like if people, because people did get very moved often by the show and very invested in that character, and people would come up to you and, you know, I get this playing the bad guy. So as the person who embodied that sort of struggle and that fight, people would come up and be quite emotional talking to you about it, and quite sort of, how did you cope with that?
I mean, sometimes it brings me to tears. It's because you hear people saying, like, they had their own Kilgrave. And you're like,
Yeah.
And it's a lot of emotion. And you just like hug them or something. It's an interesting position to be in, because I'm obviously not an expert. And I play this character and I just want to say, like, thank you for, I don't know. People feel so represented by Jessica. Yeah.
People love her show and they love Jessica. And you've been to Comic-Con, we've been to Comic-Cons together. And it's a different type of enthusiasm, isn't it? That a character like this generates.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. People are excited by Jessica, I think, because she's a survivor and she's strong. She doesn't look like what we're used to seeing. And I think, like, a lot of girls especially, who also don't look like what they're used to seeing, and like they get like, I could be the lead of a story too.
Yeah,
I'm important too.
Do you think people are surprised to find that hard-ass Jessica Jones is such a keen knitter?
Yeah,
it's not the most obviously rock and roll thing.
No, nope.
But you've always done it, right?
Yeah, I did it. I've always done it, but I really got crazy after we did season one.
Right.
I think as a way to
I see. Like a relaxation or an out?
Yeah, both. I think it was like, you know, they say like an hour a day keeps the psychiatrist away.
An hour of knitting a day.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really good for you. Really good for your brain.
Okay.
So I think like that helped me. And also in a totally different side, I have like an addiction to accomplishments.
Interesting.
And that really helps that.
Right, sure.
I can't write a novel every month, you know what I mean? So,
but you can churn out a hat.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. That gives me that same, like, that same drug feeling.
And interestingly, maybe on the same theme of that, you've turned it into a bit of a professional accomplishment too.
Always
you?
A scheme to make a buck. Like
Always
I
a
said.
Scheme to make a buck, yeah. Yep. You're still hustling, because now we can buy Kristen Ritter knitting patterns.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that something, did you just feel the need to take it to another level?
I loved it. And yes, both. It's fun. It's a fun side project for me. Yeah. I loved it. I design all the kits myself.
Right, right.
And I think I have like, I don't know, a lot at this point.
Uh-huh.
Like 15. Yeah. I don't know, a lot. I love doing it. I love, like, stupid as it sounds, like sharing the gift of knitting. I love to make things for other people and give it to them.
Uh-huh.
It brings such joy. Uh-huh. I can't tell you people I've like given them something and like tear up.
I
like
bet
people
you do.
Love it.
Yeah, of course.
I also enjoy it so much. Like yeah. It gets you off your dumb phone. It's so fun. You yeah. feel such a sense of accomplishment making something with your hands.
And but it's not enough for you to just do it in secret. You're sharing it with the world.
I want to share it. Yeah, okay. Totally. I love it. And I it was like a cool opportunity for me to like. You know, little side hustles. Yeah,
but you've got a lot of side hustles, don't you? Because it's not just the acting. You're also
yeah.
developing. You're always developing ideas. You're producing yeah. on things. You're yeah. Is the acting not enough for you? Or what is
I
that about?
I like to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And probably, especially since I've been doing Jessica, the same character for so many years now, it's like ways for me to check off boxes.
Right.
Ways for me to get like my fulfillment in other ways. So,
and you like being in control.
And I do. And I also feel like I've learned so much and I love leaning in and uh-huh. contributing to the conversation. And I love sharing ideas. I love collaborating with other people. I'm no wallflower.
So do you talk to Melissa about scripts as they come in?
And all the time.
Endlessly. Do you take a pass on them or?
Always.
Right.
Yeah. We're very collaborative that way. And they let me direct this year, too, so yeah. that in the beginning of the season, because I was already doing it from the back seat.
Was that everything you hoped it would be, directing?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
Do you want to do more of that?
Yeah. I loved it. And the crew rallied for me so much. It was just so exciting. There was great energy. It was like a party.
Right.
I think my second day of filming, I beat the number of two-camera setups from any director and are in the Marvel Universe at that point.
Wow.
And out of the four nice. Shows, Daredevil. Yeah. I had 67 two-camera setups in one day.
That is fast.
That is fast. But it was stunts.
Okay.
It was it was an action sequence.
Right.
My second day of filming.
Wow.
My second day. And my first AD went down with heat stroke. So
no. We
have our storyboards and I can't find it. I'm like, all right, I got my storyboards.
Was it Wex?
Yeah, it was Wex.
Oh, man. But he's like a tank. He doesn't go down.
He went down with heat stroke.
Wow.
And by the way, he's the one in the morning who did like the safety meeting because it was so hot that day and we're outside. He does this safety meeting on like what to look out for with heat stroke.
Yeah.
And like, sure enough, we're like, Wex, you're having all of those things that you said to look out for. And then he was gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
But then again, that for you, that's like, okay, I've got to deal with this. I'll step up and I'll do it.
Totally.
Yeah. After season one of Jessica Jones, seemingly out of the blue, you've written a novel.
Yeah.
I mean, when did you start writing it?
Around then. I mean, it took years to write it. And it was so much work. I'm never gonna downplay that. Ridiculous amount of work.
Right.
I still kind of can't believe I did it.
So it had been bubbling for a long time.
The idea had been bubbling for a long time.
Okay. Because I just felt like, because you'd never mentioned it. And suddenly you went, oh yeah, I wrote a novel. It felt like you just turned it around in a week.
No. It was an idea that I had been developing as a pilot.
I see.
That wasn't really getting a lot of interest from my agency. It was, but just not enough that they thought I could sell it.
Right.
So I was like, all right.
Okay. Yeah. There's a challenge. Yeah. I got this. So Jessica Jones is a part that ticks a lot of boxes. You know, it's lead roles, complex. She's powerful and vulnerable. She's idiosyncratic. It's your own show. It's on a big, important network. Do you worry that whatever happens next will feel inferior?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I guess the thing is to just try to do something very different.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to do after Don't Trust the Bee. Honestly, yeah, so who knows? After Don't Trust the Bee, I thought I would never find a part as good
right.
as that. I thought I would never, anything after that would be inferior.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up not being the case. So I don't think, I don't know.
Do you enjoy the uncertainty at all? Is there a thrill in that, or would you rather have the control and know what was coming?
So a little in between, because I do all these other things.
Mm.
I actually like having a little bit of time to be free and come up with other ideas.
Right.
I like to have time for myself to take care of myself. So it's somewhere in between the two.
Would you ever end up back on a farm, do you think? I mean, is there a sort of quiet life?
I think there's something in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A way to like split that up. I do love nature. Honestly, I would love to have, this is so ridiculous, I'd love to have my own sheep. so I can
right.
shear them and knit the wool into sweaters.
Sure.
What a dream.
Yeah, it's like a cottage industry. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, I have no doubt you'll be doing extraordinary things wherever they may be. Kristen, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. What a fun podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
David Tennant Does a Podcast With is a Something Else and No Mystery production. Produced by James Deacon and edited by Sean O'Daly. Additional production from Chris Skinner, Steve Ackerman, Sarah Camlett, Josh Gibbs, Dave King, Jake Valentine, Joel Freeman, Magda Saron, and Georgia Tennant. Next time.
I've never been more sure of an idea, ever.
Really?
And what I didn't know is that no one would want to do it. What I didn't know is that we would ask every single recording artist on the planet and they would all say no.
Also from Something Else.
Out to Lunch with Jay Rayner. Join Britain's biggest food critic for juicy conversations over lunch with top names in music, film, TV and comedy. Guests include Dermot O'Leary, Grayson Perry, Aisling B, and Jamie Cullum.
There was this girl I was dating at the time who it wasn't going so well with, and we'd kind of broken up, and she managed to turn up at the second set and, shall we say, had a lot to drink.
Did she heckle you?
If heckling involves trying to take my shirt off whilst I'm singing...
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.